page outline ready for those who are going to start again in January, and we'll have these ready for you to look at. The two beginning texts that you must have are a copy of the I Ching and a copy of the Portable Thoreau. So you can just scout around and get those for yourself, because that's the way we have to start. And because the next time we're going to work in both year-long journeys, try and think about deciding whether you're going to be reading in the Odyssey or be reading in Moby Dick. Now, if you go for the Odyssey, the Richmond Lattimore translation is the one to try and get a hold of. You can use any translation, but the Richmond Lattimore translation, because his translation has the Homeric line, and the Homeric hexameter is the form. It's the sixfold form. Homer lived before the, quote, Western tradition became Western. He lived at a time, 1000 B.C., when it was still universal. So the I Ching and Homer interface very, very nicely. They're both from about 1000 B.C., regardless of what the scholars say. Origins by Richard Leakey is also available in paper, and that's another one of our beginning texts. So you can find that. But the I Ching and the Portable Thoreau, and the way to, for you people who are coming back again, there'll be a lot of people who are new, but for you who are coming back, try and make a kind of an amulet of the I Ching and the Portable Thoreau. Put them together. Tie some ribbon or some yarn and tie them together and hide them someplace in your apartments or your houses. Let them accumulate energy. Because this next time around, we're going to do it. Instead of narrating and describing, we're going to do it. Because the time has come to see if this works, and if it works, then I can do something else. So that's that. One scientific point that you need to know, and I'm going to give it from the standard textbook of that. If you were studying medicine in 1990, this is one of the standard textbooks, Principles of Neuroscience, second edition, published by Elsevier, which is a Dutch publishing company. It's used internationally. It's in English. In Chapter 9, Principles Underlying Electrical and Chemical Synaptic Transmission, you need to know this basic information. Nerve cells differ from other cells in the body in their ability to communicate rapidly with one another. Nerve cells are called neurons. Any neuron can communicate rapidly with any other neuron. There are 10 to the 12th neurons in an average human body. 10 with 12 zeros after it. Each neuron is capable of about 1,000 connections at any one time, so that you have 10 to the 15th synaptic possibilities in your complete neurosystem. In other words, you have more neuron interreaction possibilities than there are stars in the galaxy. So when you see the spiraling spirit symbol of the whirling galaxy, it's a projection of the wholeness of the psyche saying, you are that. Tat avamasi. You are as complex as all that. every star that you can see, every star on a clear desert night that you can see, is about 10% of the stars that actually are there, and you have more possibilities of making connections than all that at any given time. But if you put that into a non-linear matrix form, it means that you can play like hell. Okay? Chapter 9. Just a few words from here. The basic idea here is that neuronal connections are not made only electrically, but are also made chemically. In fact, usually they're made chemically rather than electrically. Because there are two modes, because there's the chemical and the electrical mode, the infinite process by which neuronal interactivity occurs is in this polarity. And the overall reality, the gestalt of the total happening of neuronal activity, takes the form of that Lorentz adapter, four-dimensional infinity sign. So that when you're trying to remind yourself that you don't want to just see with blinders on, you have to understand that that principle goes to asymptotic proportions. That what you thought was fairly complete assessment of what's going on is so incomplete as to be almost insignificant. Is it? There's a moment of extraordinary humility when you realize how small a perspective you were working on. And you wonder why, from time to time, you were getting upset because your foundation upon which you were trying to build a life was paper thin, on edge. You can't build a pyramid of life with the third eye at the top unless you have a fairly good sand basis upon which to build. And you can't balance it all on just paper thin, and especially on a delusionary paper thin that doesn't even exist in the first place. It's impossible. And no wonder then that the ego is always so fidgety and defensive, because it doesn't literally have a leg to stand on, and doesn't want to know that. Don't tell me that. I may not, but my agent does. Or if he doesn't, my accountant, and if not him, certainly my lawyer. The ultimate lawyer being the big book in the sky. God certainly knows. Well, but the truth is, to put it kindly, he's not going to tell you. It's in his lovingness for your freedom that he will not tell you. You can try anything you want. You can try two lambs and a sheep. You can try two sheep and a lamb. Whatever you try, he's not going to tell you. And the more that you try, the more he will just turn away. So we need a better foundation. Part of the foundation is to understand that the physiological happening, the natural happening of neuronal interfacing, is both electrical and chemical. And because it's a polarized process, this phenomenon of the Lorentz adapter overall gestalt actually then occurs in our neurological system. Charles Sherrington introduced the term synapse, from the Greek synapsis, meaning junction, at the turn of the century, 1901, I believe. To refer to the specialized contact zone described historically by Ramon y Cajal, where one neuron communicates with another. In the 1930s, great debate ensued between the physiologists, led by John C. Eccles, and the pharmacologists, led by Henry Dale, about the mechanism of synaptic transmission. It's chemical. No, it's electrical. No. Both sides assume that synaptic transmission operates by a single universal mechanism. Why? Because it's a holdover of the 19th century mechanistic certainty. There's only one way, and that's the right way. Well, what's the truth about the manifested universe? It bifurcates. That's not a dirty word. And what's the truth about bifurcation? That also bifurcates. So it's like when you're looking for the truth, you have to be aware that this eye is looking for its truth and this eye is looking for its truth. And just because you're used to focusing, you think that there's one truth, there's always this bifurcation happening. It's only left and right eye or left and right brain. It's that the pairing, the bifurcation, the polarizing, is exactly what is happening all the time. It's like the inner secrets of a good dialogue, if you've read your Martin Buber. A good dialogue is the correct way of thinking in reality. The monologue is not the right way. The dialogue. You might go back to Buber, some of you, or some of you have never seen it, to I and Thou, and read it carefully. Buber was very excellent about these sorts of things. The little phrase about him that Joseph Campbell managed to squeeze out, he never understood Martin Buber, but he managed to hear a little phrase from Buber one time. He said, "Everyone must come out of his exile in his own way." And that is a very accurate way to say it. Both sides assume that synaptic transmission operates by a single universal mechanism. This is the 1930s. The physiologists argued that synaptic transmission is electrical, that it is due to current flow from the presynaptic neuron spreading directly to the postsynaptic cell. The pharmacologists argued that it is chemical, that it is due to a chemical mediator, a transmitter substance, released by the presynaptic neuron that initiates current flow in the postsynaptic cell. When physiological techniques improved, the late 1960s, it became clear, just one generation ago, became clear that all synapses do not operate with one mechanism. The work of Paul Fatt, F-A-T-T, and Bernard Katz of Eccles and his colleagues, and of Edwin Frischpan and David Potter, showed that both modes of transmission occur in the nervous system. Most synapses use a chemical transmitter. Some, however, operate by purely electrical means. Moreover, as it became technically possible to examine the fine structure of synapses by scanning electron microscopy. I have a textbook of that. The last book on the top shelf up here is the text for the scanning electron microscopy. It shows the tissues and organs of the human body down to the molecular level. Moreover, as it became technically possible to examine the fine structure of synapses, electron microscopists discovered that synaptic transmission does not occur at every point where neurons contact one another. Rather, transmission occurs only at certain critical points. Where have we heard that before? There is a point of critical accumulation. Not only is it true for the deep self in the universal way, it is in a like way, so above, so below, it is in a like way at any juncture where life processes actually do happen. In other words, the deep self is 100% consonant, resonantly, with the way life processes actually do happen. One could say, in fact, that in its pristineness, a deep self is in telepathic sympathy with all life processes wherever they actually are occurring. It's a 21st century definition of God. God is the deep self in absolute instantaneous resonance with all other deep selves who are in resonance with all life processes at any critical juncture that is actually occurring. It's like the open doors line up, and everywhere that reality is happening, it's all open. In order to criticize that statement logically will take at least 150 years of development. One is not able to tear at that for a long, long time to come. Moreover, as it became technically possible, notice, technically possible, notice that the science always has a technical resonance when it's really happening. It's like a real magician makes something manifest. He doesn't just say, well, imagine that it manifests. The rabbit. Gold. It actually manifests. So the quality of magic is not that it's superstitious, but that it's exacting. Magic is the beginning of the ecology that leads to science. And you don't get to science by having some kind of ambiguous, hopeful delusion. It's not a sleight of hand. Magic is not a sleight of hand. Notice the deprecating way in which worldly criticism seeks to mischaracterize the truth. Magicians are sleight of hand. Alchemists are false chemists. You could see that there is a definite pattern in there. Third time. Moreover, as it became technically possible to examine the fine structure of synapses, electron microscopists discovered that synaptic transmission does not occur at every point where neurons contact one another. Rather, transmission occurs only at certain critical points in the nervous system where specialized areas of the presynaptic and postsynaptic neurons are brought into appropriate apposition. Presynaptic neuron, the synapse, the postsynaptic neuron. It's only when they are in that kind of appropriate apposition, APPOSITION. It's only when the polarity is in direct face-off that the critical juncture is achieved. It's only when the eyes of this neuron meet the eyes of that neuron they see each other. And that transmission comes from that. Notice how important then the symbolic image of the eyes are, the windows of the soul are. Notice that the mother of life has a garment that's filled with eyes. These are very appropriate. These are not superstitious images. They're very appropriate images coming from people who intuitively can understand, but who can't yet scientifically demonstrate it. When Dante in the Divine Comedy sees Beatrice in her car coming on the other side of paradise, there's this whirlwind wheels filled with eyes. As many eyes as there are stars. And that's his soul rides in such a vehicle. The whirlwind waves of infinite eyes is her vehicle. So they have to be brought into appropriate apposition. Now I'm going to stop there, and there are other things that one can do. This is on page 90 of this Principles of Neuroscience. You can consult that. The important thing for us here is a structural realization now for the first time. I don't know if I have our... I guess our... Here's a copy of this mandala. Our course structure has its integrity only when this appropriate apposition alignment between the elements constituting the structure actually does occur. For instance, if you're having trouble with the science of what is the apposition element to science, symbol. It's only when science and symbol have their alignment that both of them become understandable in their wholeness. Notice that what is apposite magic is nature. What is apposite of ritual, art, history, and myth? So that these four pairs together constitute an eightfold quality of wholeness. It's not just a list of eightfold, but it's a structure of eightfoldness. It's like the eight trigrams that make up the symbolic structure of the I Ching. There are only eight trigrams. You don't need more. And you can't leave any one of them out. The only way that the I Ching symbolic matrix generates meaning exactly is when all eight trigrams are working together as a matrix. The same way here. The only way that this structure works is if all eight elements are working simultaneously in their structural relationship. In other words, it's not enough to just say, well, I've done it. I know what they are. I've made the list. I've gone through it. That's just getting your ABCs down. That's kindergarten. The graded schoolness of it is to put it into operation together as a whole. And that's the art of living and the science of being. And that's a whole other order. It's as much of another order as going from the ABCs as to learning to read and then write. there's a real jump in capacity. So that our educational program delivers the ABCs, but your employment of it as a whole, as a matrix, as a gestalt, is your seal, your guarantee that it works for you, that it applies in your life, that the technological capacity of it comes into play. In other words, this educational pattern is very scientific, but the technology of the science is your making it work in your lives. There's a power of comprehension here on a scale of a star, of a nuclear reaction on the scale of a star. You have a whole inner star energy available to you. But it takes a while to learn how to make life processes that can handle that scale. You're used to warming yourselves at a little cultural campfire. And all of us have been proud of our cultural campfires. And some of us were even naive enough one time to think that because we could warm ourselves at a half a dozen different cultural campfires, that we had a real source of superheat. They're just campfires. There's a real sun, a real inner sun, that when it rises, is life itself on that kind of a scale. This pattern delivers acquaintance with the matrix by which that can be generated. But it's up to you to do the generating, to actually generate it. I'm going to go next week to the cosmological distance ladder, but I want to bring into play a little bit from the Bhagavad Gita. The first beginning sloka, the first couplet in the Bhagavad Gita, runs like this. This is a translation of Juan Mascaro in the Penguin Classics, a very good translation. I've been using it so many decades now, I'm just used to Mascaro's way of translating. On the field of truth, on the battlefield of life, what came to pass, Sanjaya, when my sons and their warriors faced those of my brother Pandu? Two sets of warriors that are coming into an appropriate apposition. There's a synapse in the field of life that's going to occur. The whole Bhagavad Gita is the conversation between Arjuna and Krishna in the synapse gap, before the transmission. The Bhagavad Gita, in a very masterful way, Bhagavan Vyasa was hands down superior mind. He cannot deliver to you that realm of the synapse gap conversation, dialogue, directly. And so he says, the only way that you can hear what's going on is that you have to hear it from a blind sage who also cannot see it, but can only see it in his mind, in his yogic mind. And he tells it to the king. And the Bhagavad Gita allows you to overhear what the blind sage tells to the king about the dialogue between Krishna and Arjuna in the synapse gap on the battlefield of life. Do you get the levels? Now, the ancient Sanskrit word for battle, the field of battle, was Kurukshetra. And I understand that if you went to New Delhi, to Old Delhi today in India, there is an area preserved in Old Delhi, a very large park, not like Griffith Park, but a large park area, which has always been identified for the last several thousand years as Kurukshetra. The reason why Delhi is where Delhi is, and it's the capital of India, is because that's where this happened. That what the Bhagavad Gita talks about is the fulcrum upon which all of Indian civilization is focused. Notice that to the Indian mind, which is extremely metaphysical, the peculiar nature of this is also geographically and historically exact. There's the dam field. That's Kurukshetra. But it also occurs every time anybody really themselves, in reading or hearing the Bhagavad Gita, you should hear it instead of read it, you should hear it. When you hear it, Kurukshetra again occurs. That synapse again occurs. That dialogue again occurs. And the Bhagavad Gita is then and only then true. Next week we're going to take the cosmological distance ladder, and I'm going to deliver for you the Buddhist Forest Sermon about developing context in a late 20th century scientific way. But I'm also going to bring the Bhagavad Gita in, because in a very real way, the Bhagavad Gita is a very accurate apposition to classical Theravadan Buddhism. The Bhagavad Gita was written about 250, 300 BC. The Bhagavad Gita is the hidden side of the classical Buddhist practice. And one of the hierophantic keys that elicited the Mahayana out of the Hinayana is the challenge of the Bhagavad Gita. Because the Bhagavad Gita, when paired with classical Buddhism, Theravada, form another synapse. Both of them become polarities, yet as Lorentz attractors in a larger whole. Another sphere of context. It's universal law. Every time a pairing occurs on whatever scale, every time a pairing occurs, a new wholeness surges into emergence. Creation. So I understand perfectly well that by delivering this, this becomes temporized eventually, because a whole new challenge has been introduced, a whole new level of apposition becomes available. Well, it's going to take 150 years for that to occur and happen, but there will come a time when somebody's going to have to set all of this aside and figure out some new way to go. But right now, this is the way to go. Not because I think it's the way to go, but because it moves. I won't say forward, I won't say upward, although my friend Theodore Sturgeon used to always say onwards and upwards. It moves. It has movement. And a life process that has movement, when paired with your meditative stillness, that creates the truth. And whenever truth is created, that level of reality now then exists. So next week, if you can get for yourself some kind of a copy of a Bhagavad Gita, and in the Bhagavad Gita there are 18 sections. The section that I think you might enjoy taking a look at is section 6. Now think to yourself, 18 sections, 3 sections of 6, so that the 6th section is the last of the first third. Now if you think of the Bhagavad Gita for a moment, in 18 sections like a spear, the place that you would grab it to throw it is about the 6th section. What would you grab it to throw it with? You would grab it with your hand. We're going to grab the Bhagavad Gita with this kind of a hand next week and throw it at the same time that we're doing the cosmological fourth sermon of the classical Buddha in 21st century scientific ways. Why both those? Because that is an appropriate apposition to allow you to get the gestalt of what is being talked here. Not talked about, but what is being talked. T-A-L-K-E-D. Not taught, talked. Let me retract one ratchet. The speaker wishes to speak freely to you, and this is a mode in which we can do it. So we'll do that next week. We've only got 5 meetings left, and I'm bringing you to a culmination, hopefully, so that if any triggers can be pulled, they will be pulled. Okay? Thank you.